Okay, this hour we're going to take your phone calls with Richard Dolan as we talk about disclosure. And by the looks of things, all the lines are already lit. But we'll be back in a moment with more and Richard Dolan on Coast to Coast AM. Richard, before we go to calls, is there any one compelling UFO case that really caught your eye? One of those cases that had you so convinced about this direction you were going?
Oh, well, George, yeah, there's quite a few. I don't know if there's one, but a good one that people, I think, are not very, very familiar with, which I looked into in detail, took place in the 1980s. It was a U.S. Coast Guard encounter with a UFO from March of 1988 near a town of Eastland, Ohio. The reason it's a great case is that you have a number of witnesses who saw this object out over it was Lake Erie.
Mm-hmm.
That really caught their attention, a bright object that was so low over the ice over a lake that it was causing the ice to crack over the lake.
Wow.
Long story short, they contacted the Coast Guard, which eventually sent a couple of men over there. They observed this object for a long, long time. They were radioing into the to their headquarters about it. The object lifted up, zoomed around it. It released a variety of smaller objects that zipped around, one of them in the direction of the nuclear facility, which was very nearby. What was fascinating about it also is that you had one photograph that was taken of it by a local. I've seen the photograph. I reproduced it in one of my volumes of UFOs in the National Security State. The Coast Guard prepared a detailed memo, an analysis of what happened. Fascinating. You can find it on the web. It's been declassified. But what happened was once the topic, once that came out, they were almost compelled to issue immediately after that a debunking statement just saying, no, it was an astronomical sighting that confused the witnesses.
Of course.
I mean, an absolutely absurd, ridiculous explanation. This isn't from the ancient times of the 1950s. This took place in March of 1988, not that long ago. I'm sure a lot of people living remember it well. And it's a fascinating case. You've got a number of witnesses who gave detailed accounts. The case got some media attention. There was some journalistic follow-up. The witnesses were all explicitly crystal clear about what happened. This was some incredible object low over Lake Erie, in the evening of March 4th, 1988. Heck of a case. And what attracted me to it was simply the fact that we have a detailed statement from a United States agency, that is the U.S. Coast Guard, that described it in great detail. I don't know if that's the best UFO case, but it's certainly one that just, I remembered reading it for the first time years ago thinking, my God, and they are still denying that this is anything to get concerned about. There's no defense implications. They have to see it. It makes it crystal clear that if they, the government that is, were to announce that this phenomenon is real, they're going to almost immediately thereafter have to recognize that they can't control whatever these things are.
That's right.
I live out on the East Coast in the state of New York. Not very far from where I live is New York's Hudson Valley, which during the early 1980s experienced a dramatic, awesome, in some cases traumatic, series of sightings by people of enormous objects that hovered low over their heads, right over the highway. There were scenes right out of a Steven Spielberg movie, in a sense of these objects shining intensely bright lights down on the road, like it was daylight, but it was night. And what happened was that the Federal Aviation Administration, which was on the spot here, what are they going to say? There is no way that they could tell the public, oh, yeah, people, we've got these very, very large football field size objects hovering low over the highway.
And but, we don't know what they are.
We don't think they're dangerous.
Yeah, we don't think they're dangerous. We don't know what they are. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a recipe for public panic.
That's right, exactly. And that could be a reason they don't disclose, Richard.
Yeah, I think that is a reason. I think that's one. Not everyone is going to panic. I think a lot of people have been acquainted with this field. You know, they can deal with it. It might be a bit of a shock, but they can deal with it. But not everyone handles these things the same
way. That's true. You know what? I would guess that those who listen to this program, the night people, all would probably say, I knew it. But the daytime folks, they're the ones that would panic.
The daytime folks, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them would, yeah. We all have relatives. I have family reunions, and I love my family, but I can tell you right now, George, not everyone would handle this very well.
I agree. Let's take some calls here, Richard, while we've got you this hour. John, truck driving in Pennsylvania on the wild card line. You're with us. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good.
Hey, I just had two quick questions for you and for your guest there.
All right.
Well, first one's a comment, really, about the other day I heard you say how many stations carry your program here. If every one of your listeners would go and sign that petition to get the government to come out and reveal this, I don't remember exactly how many people you said listen, but I'm pretty sure it was a pretty big number.
It's huge.
And the question I got for you is, do you think there's going to be a candidate that's running for president that is holding this in, but they know when they get elected, they're going to just come out and say whatever they need to say and tell everybody that what's actually happening out here? Because I remember the other week you were talking, you know, you guys were saying something about
Well, I would say, to answer your question, I would say no, the presidential candidate, if they get elected, will not say anything because they don't know. Richard?
Right. I like that question. I don't think that there is any of the candidates right now. I'd be shocked if any of them, once they get elected, were to push this topic. It's a very difficult topic to play positively, politically. At least that's the consensus in D.C. Personally, I think that it would be possible for a candidate to take this in a positive way. I remember Dennis Kucinich, we all remember this, in 2008 when he was campaigning for the Democratic Party nomination for the presidency. And poor Dennis Kucinich got creamed on national television over this issue because his very good friend Shirley MacLaine had sort of outed Dennis Kucinich's own UFO sighting. Now, I mean, think about this. Dennis Kucinich is a man who has tremendous high regard among many of his colleagues as a guy who's very, very intelligent, has a lot of integrity. And he saw a UFO years ago when he...
Something he could not explain.
Right, and he was not alone in seeing it. This is the thing. The media made it seem like he was the space cadet, but there are actually two other people who were with him who did not want publicity, but they also confirmed the sighting. But here's Kucinich on national TV getting asked this question. And, you know, it was awful because I just felt horrible for him. He didn't want to come out forthrightly and say, I mean, he said, yes, it was an unidentified flying object. But I really wanted him to be much stronger on it than he was. And I just feel... He felt constrained, I'm sure, in...
Well, here's the problem, Richard. I mean, here we are. The economy's a mess. We've got these wars going on. You've got all these other things. What do you think the mainstream media would do to a candidate up there, whether the president or these Republicans who are running, and someone who would stand up, not Ron Paul, who talks about the Federal Reserve, but somebody who would stand up and say, I want to investigate the UFO thing? I think, as sad as it is, and as much as you and I think this is very serious stuff, the mainstream media would rip him to shreds, or her.
Absolutely, and their political opponents, of course, would jump right in. If it's a Democrat who says it, the Republicans will go all over him. And if it's a Republican, the Democrats would go all over him.
You can't win.
To tear him apart, exactly. The only way that they can come out with it, again, and this is what Bryce and I have hammered this point in AD after disclosure, is when they are forced, when they are forced. Something's got to force the issue. And the good news from the public's point of view is there are really three variables to the disclosure equation. There's the secret keepers, who, as we have always said, have no incentive really ever for giving the secret up. Then there's these other beings. We call them the others because I don't know what they are. They're not us. They're part of the equation, and maybe they'll do something. But the real variable in the equation, I would say, is us. That is our society, we the people. And the reason is that we are transforming ourselves as a society so rapidly, so dramatically. Look at us in the last generation, how we are so different now. Our ability to communicate globally is off the charts compared with, say, 1991, just 20 years ago, even 2001. Our technology is turning us literally into a different civilization. And ultimately, it's going to turn us, I think, into a different species when you get into the fact that we've now mapped the human genome. We're going to have cybernetic attributes, I have no doubt, in the next century. We're going to be a totally different group of people here. And in that type of a situation, I think it is unthinkable that we will be at the same dead-end spot in terms of UFO secrecy. I think we're going to have serious breakthroughs. I think we're seeing signs of them already in phenomena like WikiLeaks.
Mm-hmm.
WikiLeaks could not have even existed 10 years
ago.
No, there's no way. And here it is. WikiLeaks is out there. And other new avenues toward the truth are going to arise. I don't know if we can imagine them all. But we're going to see the end of, as my friend Steve Bassett calls it, the truth embargo. That will end, and it will only end because we force it out. They're not ever going to do this voluntarily.
All right, let's go to Lori in Salem, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Lori, you're on with Richard Dolan.
Hi there. Thank you, George.
Hi.
Sure.
Hi, Richard. I just was curious about also, for as many listeners as there are and callers that call in with their stories and their experiences, why the petition number wasn't so... should have been up there, way, way up there, sky high. But I'm glad to see he's going to keep trying.
Well, and let me address a little bit of that, Richard. First of all, it's not easy to get on there and sign that petition. I tried it, and you got to go through all kinds of a registration process just to do it.
Yeah.
So it's not where you just go there, click, and you're done. And they made it difficult for people. So you really have to spend some time to sit down, fill out the info, and then you could vote. You agree?
Absolutely. That's a really good point, George. I'm glad you thought of that because I was thinking, wasn't I? And that was one reason. It took a long time to get signed on there. You had to go through the process of registering, and guaranteed a lot of people wouldn't want to do that.
If they'd made it,
just go to the website and click yes or no.
Oh, millions. Millions.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, we're all kind of lazy, aren't we? We've got we're so spoiled now.
Well, and here's the other thing, though. Well, let me add this ingredient to it. He needed 5,000.
Right.
By the time he was on our air, he was close to that anyway. I think once you get to that point and then you have that difficult registration process to vote, I think people said, there's no need to vote. I'm already, he's already good. He's got what he needs.
Right. That's a very good point. I think both of your points are excellent. But yeah, there's. I think the first one you made is really apropos. This just it was a bit of a
hassle,
a little of a hassle to register. And I mean, really, if this had been again 20 years ago, and we had been on what was then the internet, and it was that easy, I mean, this by those standards, this was a very easy process when you really think.
Well,
about
and you're really
it,
not so- anonymous when you're voting. I mean, didn't it say you had to fill out who you are and stuff like that?
Yeah, give my email address.
Yeah, not a lot of people want to do that, especially when you're already suspicious of government.
Yeah, excellent point, and particularly regarding the UFO issue.
Yes.
Where you know it's very easy. It's very easy to be paranoid.
They're going to put us on a list.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I think your points are very well taken. The fact that he got in the two petitions over 17,000 people is not bad. And, in fact, as far as White House petitions go, this did very well. I mean, there is one for the legalization of marijuana that, mm-hmm. that did better. This one, though, I think did extremely well. Most of the petitions don't get anywhere near even 5,000.
See, now everybody who filled out that marijuana one, they've given the feds their name and address. Let's go to Will in New York. He's to the Rockies. Go ahead, Will.
Hey, what a pleasure to speak to you guys.
Good.
By the way, Will Gallison, I'm the musician. We've spoken.
Sure.
How are you?
Good.
I'm so glad to get a chance to speak. I wanted to comment on your, Richard, on what you said about sitting next to someone in the airplane and them asking you what you do.
Oh, yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
Because I've been obsessed with this subject as long as you have, and I just made it a point to be
Hello?
The kind of person who is smart and looks stupid rather than the person who looks smart and is stupid. And I would always, when I speak to someone on a bus or a train or a plane or whatever, random people very often just bring out the subject without even being asked. Have you ever seen a UFO? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you would be astonished how many people have had not just believe in it, but have had real experiences, either abduction experiences or sightings, very dramatic sightings. I'm taking a wild guess right now, but I would bet it's 25% to 30%.
Yeah, I'm very glad you mentioned this, Will, because actually in my life I speak privately to people about the UFO topic every single day, every day. When I fly, frequently I hesitate only because I've got like 3 or 4 hours to sit next to a person, and it's either a case where they think that I've lost my mind, or they glom onto me and I don't get a moment's rest for the next 4 hours. That'll often happen.
Yeah.
So I usually don't go into it. But no, you are absolutely right. I have discovered in my own private life, my non-UFO life.
Non-UFO life?
I do, actually. I've got neighbors. When people find out that I'm a researcher on this topic, what I discover is there are so many stories. And inevitably, someone will say, oh, wow, you know about UFOs. I have got to tell you about what happened to me 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whenever. And then they proceed to tell me something that is just extraordinary, frequently. Not always, but a lot of the times, the things that people have lived with in their personal lives. And then here's the thing that really bothers me more than anything else, is that they have frequently told no one or next to no one about this event in their life that is, in some cases, the most incredible thing that's ever happened to them.
They're afraid. They think they're going to get ridiculed.
Exactly.
It's like the old days. I mean,
what does that say about our society? You've got this incredible, awe-inspiring phenomenon going on around us every single day, and yet when it happens to someone, they feel dirty, like if they talk to someone about it. That what that says is that our society, there's a cultural and political repression about this, and that's not an accident. I believe that that's a matter of policy.
Richard, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And if you need to email me, it's george@coasttocoastam.com. And Richard's website, of course, we've got that linked up for you too at coasttocoastam.com. Strange creatures everywhere. Next hour, we're going live to the United Kingdom to talk about the mystery animals of the British Isles. Wait till you hear what some of those creatures are, Let's come back in a moment and take final phone calls with Richard Dolan as we talk about AD after disclosure. We're with Richard Dolan. Richard, of all the theories that abound about UFOs, that they come from, you know, within our solar system, within the center of the Earth, within, planetary systems outside our solar system, other dimensions, they're demons. Is there one area that you particularly subscribe to?
Good question. I think that there actually is there's a combination of things going on. I do believe that there's extraterrestrial elements to the UFO phenomenon. In other words, I think that it's realistic to think that some of these intelligences come from a planet that is not Earth, somewhere else in the galaxy, probably. I mean, after all, yeah, every scientist will, every astronomer will delight in telling us how far away the stars are, and how that they'll say, you people don't realize just how vast the distances are and how impossible it is to go from here to there. Which, for you and me, that's right with our current technology, but we are maybe 50 to 100 years away from massive revolutionary developments that will allow, if not biological human beings, then artificially intelligent entities or ships to make the journey. In other words, it's really not all that impossible. And then once arriving at a world, would you be able to find a way to interact with it in some way? I think the answer is yes. So I think that some of the UFO answer is ET, but some of these, if you really look at the reports carefully, it looks like they're able to play, manipulate our space-time reality in certain ways, so that dimensions somehow play a part in this. And beyond that, I do think that there's just a certain amount of real, what we would call weirdness to this, that make me wonder if there is a dimensional aspect. You know, can there be entities that live in another dimension of reality that we can't normally access? Sure, I'm very open to that, and I think that that could very well be part of the answer as well.
All right, back to the calls. Jeremy in Fresno, California. He's with us. Hi, Jeremy.
Yeah, good evening, Richard and George.
Hi.
Thanks for your show.
Thank you.
Question I have for Richard, if he's able to answer it, is the group WikiLeaks, they were able to infiltrate, you know, the government computer system and basically bring up all these documents that they never would have told us about and had no plans on telling us about. Would it be possible for a group like that or any group really to bring up all the documents regarding UFOs and ETs and the rest of the conspiracy cover-ups? Would that be something possible? Or
Absolutely, yes. And as a matter of fact, about a year ago at this time, Julian Assange, the head of WikiLeaks, indicated that in within the release of the massive cache of documents from the U.S. State Department, the so-called State Department cables that got him into so much trouble with the U.S. government, he said that there were documents in there that dealt with UFOs. We still have not seen these documents, but this is according to Julian Assange himself. And at around the same time, a spokesperson for WikiLeaks said that what they had within this latest release of documents was documents that were so explosive politically that there was like a thermonuclear bomb. And we don't know for sure, but I wonder if this is in reference to UFO documents that WikiLeaks has access to right now. The fact is that these have not been released, and so I don't really know. But look, there's a long history of declassified U.S. government documents relating to UFOs that are, some of them are really quite extraordinary. This is what I spend most of my time writing about, in fact. So we know that there are many U.S. government documents that are fascinating UFO documents. So clearly, I think there's an opportunity for information like this to leak out in an unauthorized way. And I do believe that this is a phenomenon we're going to see more of in the coming years. That, in other words, there will be whether WikiLeaks or some other organization that springs up that's like that will release a UFO kind of like an explosive UFO document or series of documents.
Let's go to Ohio. Somebody called anonymous there. Wonder what we got here. Hi there.
Hi. I've been listening to you guys' show for about 3 months now, 4 or 5 months, and it's incredible. But
thank you.
Yeah, so let me get to the point. Do you guys remember the natural gas explosions that happened in Ohio February 12th?
I do.
Yes. I was, you know, in the area, driving on the back road, and I wanted your host, or it's kind of nerve-wracking, this is crazy, but yeah, So I'm driving on the back highway, and it's a semi, and I'm going to pass the semi, you know, thinking nothing of it, you know, because, you know, semis drive slow on the back highways. So I go for the pass, and I'm not realizing it's a semi in front of it. So being on a two-lane highway, one going one way, one going the other, I decide to get in between them, you know, just because, you know, I couldn't pass both semis at one time. So as I'm sitting in between these two semis, I notice that there's a light in the upper left-hand corner, and it was later on that night after the natural gas explosion. And it's crazy because one occurred the night before in Allenstown, Pennsylvania. I don't know if anybody caught about that, but the one in Ohio. So I'm in between these two semis, and I notice they're the dirt trailers. They're not the ones with the tarp over it. Well, they are the ones with the tarp over it. So I'm thinking, why would they have a lit lantern inside in the upper left-hand corner where dirt and debris goes? So I'm riding, and I'm looking down at my speed limit, and we're doing 65, and it's like dead of winter. And I'm like, okay, these guys are flying. So I'm like, I should just chill in between them. Uh-huh. And seconds later, I noticed that the light just beamed on. It just made the tarp look invisible. I don't know what it could have been, but it was just the most incredible thing I've ever seen. I've been telling friends.
Are you saying a light from above? I'm not sure I'm following
I'm sorry. From out the back of the trailer, sir. It was in the
It was already in the trailer, I guess, huh?
The upper left hand.
Amazing. Well, I don't know. Richard, what do you think?
I don't know. I'm trying to visualize the whole scenario in my mind, and I listened carefully, but I'm not sure I really saw the government's scooped up these. You're saying that it's kind of made the truck part of it invisible?
Well, governments have scooped up some of these craft, haven't they? Can you hear us, Richard?
I'm not hearing anyone there.
Uh-oh.
Hello? Anybody there?
Hold on, Richard. Hold on. Rich, can you hear us there? Richard? Well, we lost him there, Tommy. So whatever's happening, the demon is back. We'll let you get him back on if you can, and we'll make note of that. It's a phone thing, folks, somewhere along the long-distance line. First-time caller, let's go to Luke. I'll take care of this call, Grand Junction, Colorado. Hi, Luke.
Well, the truth is that George and I forgot your name. Well, I have a story for you guys, actually.
All right, go ahead, Luke.
Well, back in about 1998, 1999, we actually have some video of this spacecraft going back behind the moon. And we actually saw it from the left-hand corner. And I just wanted to know if anybody else got any footage of it or anything like that.
I'm not sure if they did.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, you guys, it's a great show, and thank you for letting me call in. It's been about 2 years.
Absolutely. And if you ever see anything out there, send us some pictures. Indeed. Richard, while we were talking, the government, they have scooped up craft. They've covered them with tarps, and they've taken them. Where do they take them?
Well, they take them certainly according to Roswell. When Roswell happened all those years ago, we know that the wreckage was taken to Wright Field in Dayton, Ohio, now known as Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Without a doubt, there's a large area there, I think, even to this day, probably, that's got some of this technology there. There's certainly a huge underground component to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Look, there are classified installations that are undoubtedly unacknowledged, within the United States. There's, I think, very strong evidence for a large underground clandestine series of bases that are very possibly beneath my feet or beneath your feet right now, where this type of material could be studied. My friend Richard Souter, who's research underground bases, underground underwater bases, believe it or not, has done a lot of research on this, and really I think his research makes it amply clear that going back even 40 plus years, the U.S. Navy made plans to go deep, deep underground. The technology was not a problem. The money was not a problem. The only thing that we don't have is is complete confirmation of this massive network, but it sure looks like it's the case. And so I think the simplest thing to do from a secrecy point of view is you create a base that doesn't officially exist. You put it deep underground, and you've got total security.
Okay, next up, let's go to east of the Rockies, Tom, Iron Mountain, Missouri. Hey, Tom.
How you guys doing?
Okay.
I've got a comment-question combination here, and I would like to discuss real quickly the Jimmy Carter incident.
Sure.
I was wondering if either of you gentlemen had either entertained the thought that maybe these ETs, whatever they are, might be in the backgrounds pulling some strings.
Political strings?
Well, the strings of government, perhaps, of the workings of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
We have Ronald Reagan coming out after Jimmy Carter saying, no bones about it, you know, maybe there's this force already amongst us. And I'm just wondering if, you know, any of you two gentlemen have ever entertained the thought that maybe these guys are in the background pulling the strings, because there's not going to be disclosure until they allow it to happen.
No, there's no doubt about
that.
Really possible. Go ahead,
Richard. Look, if we were, let's say, we were a small group of us and we were ETs and we were involved in looking at this human society, we would know a few things. One thing is we would know these people are going to get some serious technology in a very short period of time, and they might be an issue for us. I mean, not that they'll ever be able to compete with us, but they're going to be able to determine and detect us before very long. And so we might want to influence their power structure. I think it would be a logical thing to do, to be quite honest. So how would you do it? You would have your own fifth column within that society. This could have been the case for years and years. It's entirely possible. So the question comes down to evidence, and that's a little more tricky. It's hard to prove this or disprove it. But certainly I think it's a logical possibility. And if I were doing counterintelligence on behalf of the U.S. or some other government, yes, sure, I'd be looking into this. No question, I would be asking, can we determine to what extent these governments are being influenced by another civilization? So, I think your point is very well taken, and a lot of researchers have said this, of course, over the years. You've got famously guys like David Icke, who added his own spin to it, that they're shape-shifting reptilians.
What did you think of the late Colonel Philip Corso?
Yeah, unfortunately, I never met Philip Corso. He passed away about 2 years before I really entered the field publicly, but I know a lot of the folks who did know him quite well, and the thing is, I think he was fundamentally truthful, I will just tell you, and I know that there are prominent people on the other side of that who don't think that he was, but I think fundamentally Philip Corso, I mean, here's a man who was very highly regarded by his colleagues in the defense community. He was the military liaison for years for Senator Strom Thurmond. When Phil Corso wrote his book the day after Roswell in 1997, Strom Thurmond, who didn't know it was about UFOs, wrote this glowing review, this glowing statement about Corso, talking about him as a great American.
And then he found out it was about UFOs. I think he went nuts, didn't he?
Well, he ran far and fast from that and basically said, I don't know nothing about no UFOs, and pulled that forward right out of the book. But point is that Corso was a guy who had real street cred among his colleagues. So then he comes out at the end of his life. He had talked previously about the MIA issue in Vietnam and had a lot of credibility on that. So now he's talking about UFOs. And the thing is, in his book, there are mistakes. They're easy to identify, some of them. And, you know, you read it and think, well, what the heck is this all about? But keeping in mind, Corso was in his 80s at the time. From what I have heard, his original notes on this that were then turned into a book by Bill Burns, the original notes might be interesting from a researcher's point of view, but they really wouldn't have been a readable book. They were kind of just jumbled in there, as it were. So, probably things may not have been remembered quite accurately. I wouldn't be surprised about that. So, yeah, I think that there's always going to be mistakes in recollection and interpretation as well. But I think fundamentally, I think he was telling the truth.
Yeah, I think so, too. Let's go to our Skype line, Darius in Toronto.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm really happy that I got on tonight, George.
Good.
I have an experience that I had in 98 where I had traversed to another dimension through sound and the use of drugs. Marijuana and MDMA.
What was on that other dimension once you got there?
Yeah, it was through music of playing negative and positive sounds. It sort of released my soul to that dimension. It was like it was totally accidental. I didn't plan on having this experience happen to me. I just went into a party, took MDMA and smoked some marijuana, and that combination did something that I've never had. I never thought it could do it, something as psychedelic as that, because I've always associated such an experience with like LSD or mushrooms. I never thought that marijuana and MDMA could produce me going to some kind of dimension. And I thought I was crazy at first. I thought I was crazy that I had this experience where I went into a dimension where I saw a light as soon as I got in there, I thought I was going to be cannibalized first by these like gatekeepers or whatever. I find out later through that by going back and researching that in Hinduism, they call it Aravada, which are the gatekeepers of Svarga.
Yeah, that's true. No, you definitely had an experience. Look, we're out of time. Richard, any speaking engagements for you coming up?
Well, I've just gone through a large, like a rush of speaking engagements. I don't have anything for the next month. In February, I will be at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles.
I'll see you there.
I bet I'll see you there. I'm looking into a couple of other ones that'll be in the central U.S. Around that time, possibly something in Texas. I got to nail that one down. My hunch is that as the spring of 2012 gets going, every spring, there's always a bunch of places that I end up going at. Right now, I don't have any of them lined up.
All right, my friend. Say hi to your wife for us and be well, okay?
It was my pleasure being on, George, as always, and we'll talk soon, I'm sure.
Thank you. Richard Dolan. His website's well worth going to, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back in a moment, we're going live to the United Kingdom. We're going to talk about some mysterious creatures. Should be fun. So get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM.